How can you make a difference on this crazy planet? Listen to nature-inspired stories and interviews with environmental educators for some new ideas. Sustainable Living News writer, nature walker, and youth educator Wendy Natterney-Fashon hosts the Story Walking Radio Hour to talk about issues that matter and to introduce you to people who are coming up with creative, sensible solutions. Let's engage with Earth, with spirit, and with one another, heart to heart, to solve problems and co-create more meaningful life stories. Tune in to Nature's Loving Vibes every Monday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. here on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Welcome. I'm Wendy Natterney-Fashon, your host for the Story Walking Radio Hour on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. The show airs every Monday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time. You can listen online or on your mobile devices. You can go out for a walk and listen. Or in your car, just ask Alexa. And to learn more or for a full schedule, go to dreamvision7radio.com. Dream Vision 7 Radio Network is the media partner for Omega Institute. This episode is brought to you by the Empowerment Factory, a nonprofit dedicated to giving at-risk youth the skills to lead happier, healthier, more empowered lives. This organization offers engaging environmental literacy curricula that combines reading, creative arts, and mindfulness. How can you help make a difference in the lives of our children? Visit the Empowerment Factory's Makers Marketplace on Saturdays at the Pawtucket Winters Farmers Market, or visit them online at www.theempowermentfactory.org and learn more. Every day we learn about big environmental challenges affecting our lands, forests, water, and climate. And each of us wonders, what can I, as one small person, do about it? Amazingly, one can start to bring positive change by doing small things, because the small things do add up. And one can encourage friends to do small things, which adds up to even more. Focus on one problem at a time, and think of an action that can make a difference, even if only a small difference. Here on the Story Walking Radio Hour, we focus on environmental issues. And this episode is about local food systems and how to bring farmers, producers, and eaters together through community access programs, like farmers markets, to increase availability, affordability, and sustainability of locally sourced foods. 2019 was a good year for growers and good weather and a late frost. This may seem encouraging. However, between 2012 and 2019, Rhode Island actually lost 200 farms and 13,000 acres of land for cultivation. As much as 90% of the food we consume in Rhode Island and in Massachusetts still comes from outside of New England, and much of that is junk food lacking in nutritional value. The majority of produce sold in supermarkets is shipped all the way from California, and that requires a lot of fossil fuel for transport. Recognizing all this, the New England region has established a bold plan to produce 50% of its food by the year 2060. Farm Fresh Rhode Island and Coastal Food Shed have adopted this vision, and they're taking the lead. Now, Farm Fresh, founded in 2004, is a nonprofit organization that now operates the largest indoor farmers market in New England, the Pawtucket Wintertime Farmers Market. Building a market community is a feat of complex coordination, as we'll learn from today's guests. Farm Fresh Rhode Island links farmers and eaters through farmers markets, wholesale distribution, financial assistance for low-income shoppers, and educational programming. The organization has provided farmers with economic opportunity, which helps keep farmland in production. Our first guest, Lee Vincola, is the Farmers Market Program Manager for Farm Fresh Rhode Island. She's been working toward food system sustainability in New England for a couple of decades. Over the years, she's come at this work from a variety of angles, including as an urban gardener, writer, marketing and PR specialist, event planner, and most recently, a restaurant owner. After 5 years in Providence, She feels deeply rooted to the Ocean State's food community and committed to making fresh food accessible to all. Our second guest today, Susan Murray, founded and runs Flying Carrot Farm with her partner Tony Wood in Dartmouth, Massachusetts. They work together to grow a diverse selection of vegetables, fruits, herbs, and flowers using sustainable farming techniques and building the health of their soil. One goal of the farm is to build community around local food through their CSA, and CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture. They believe that everyone should have access to fresh local produce regardless of where you live or economic status. Working with local community partners, Susan brings some subsidized farm shares into low-income areas of New Bedford, Massachusetts. She's also the New Bedford Farmers Market Manager, working with Coastal Food Shed to make locally grown food available to all. Before introducing you to Lee and Susan, however, I'd like to take you on a virtual story walk to the Winter's Farmers Market. So, imagine standing outdoors on a winter's day, breathe in the cold air, and as you let your breath out, notice how the cold air causes the warm moisture in your breath to condense into tiny droplets of water that create a small misty cloud. Breathe in and out two more times and feel the cold air wake you up and clear your mind. Now, imagine standing in front of a large brick-and-mortar mill complex. This mill was built 130 years ago in 1889 by the Hope Webbing Company. The building was heated by steam in the winter, and it was designed with many windows to allow a maximum amount of natural light. Hope Webbing was once the largest manufacturer of narrow woven fabric. The company produced belting, braiding, cording, labels, life preservers, mattresses, suspenders, and underwear. And during World War II, the company was the largest employer in Pawtucket, Rhode Island, with 3,380 workers. At that time, it produced parachute harness webbing and camouflage net tape for the war effort. It housed 1,100 looms and 1,100 braiders upon 600,000 square feet of space. This very large building was recently transformed into what is known today as the Hope Artist Village, a vibrant community of entrepreneurs, artists, and nonprofit organizations like Farm Fresh Rhode Island. And here you'll find Seven Stars Bakery and New Harvest Coffee Roasters, as well as the largest wintertime farmers market in New England. If you were to enter the building on a weekday, we could take a good 15-minute walk through a long maze of empty hallways without retracing our steps. Today is Saturday, however, and every Saturday during the winter season, between 9 a.m. and 1 p.m., the mill hallways buzz with activity. We enter the warm building, walk through the foyer, past the Farm Fresh information table, through a doorway, and step into a hallway as wide as a city street. The brick walls are lined with doors and windows, and the space does, in fact, feel like a city street. Crowds bustle around vendor tables laden with local produce. We could spend an hour or more just walking and exploring Mother Nature's truest abundance right here at the indoor winter market. The first table on the left is Pharmacy Herbs. That's pharmacy spelled with a capital F for farm. The table is a large display of farm-grown herbal products and honey. Tea blends are packaged in brown paper bags and labeled with enticing names like Winter Warm-Up and Unwind Your Mind. And coming in from the cold, you crave a hot cup of tea. Across the way is the Harvest Kitchen table, selling jars of stewed tomatoes and spicy dill pickles, as well as beans and grains grown in the nearby state of Maine. Harvest Kitchen is a Farm Fresh Rhode Island nonprofit youth training program, providing young foodies with hands-on experience in local food production. As we continue walking down the hallway, we find tables stacked with bunches of winter kale, turnips, carrots, radishes, and beets. You pick through crates filled with potatoes and yams and onions and garlic, wondering what ingredients you might buy to make a hearty root vegetable soup. And then you see crates filled with sugar pumpkins, butternut, and acorn squash, and consider making squash soup instead. There's also a colorful display of Brussels sprouts and cabbage and broccoli and cauliflower. Who knew cauliflower came in all those colors? I point out some large coolers behind another table. They're filled with stewing hens, pork roast, steaks, sausage, bacon, and eggs. And across the way, a local seafood vendor has trays of clams, oysters, and mussels, and another tray with thick cuts of swordfish. We stop by the Fairland Farms table to sample some dried organic cranberries. Yum! And across from there is another table loaded with crates of assorted apples and paper bags filled to the brim with apples and jugs of cider. We stop by a display of mittens and gloves and hats and socks, and we feel the incredible softness. These are the product of a farm that raises alpacas to make antimicrobial fiber and yarn, which it sends to a local textile business to be knitted into winter wear. Drawn forward by the sound of a fiddle, we walk past jars of fruit jam and tables of breads and pastries. We walk past the coffee guy at the end of the hall to a station selling hot crepes. And behind the crepe station is a band of musicians getting ready to play another number. We order a savory breakfast crepe to sit down and share, and then we listen to the music. A stranger sits down next to us and asks if we have seen the handcrafted gifts in the empowerment factory in the other hallway. And you respond, "The other hallway? You mean there's more?" "Oh, yes," says the stranger. "Just go through those doors and follow the people in the arrows on the tomato signs. Someone from the crepery station calls my name." And so I walk over to claim our breakfast. We sit back down, we eat, rest, and catch our breath before continuing our adventure through the old mill. So there's another story walk. And now that you have an idea of what to expect at the Winter Farmers Market, we could begin to understand how this market supports a local community that is preserving our environment and protecting our climate. You see, by shopping for locally grown food, we become a part of that community, and we help the environment in many ways. And so that's what I want to talk about a little bit today before we bring our guests on. So, environment. How do we help the environment by shopping locally? Well, first, know that these local growers care about the environment and wildlife. Rhode Island farmers are leaders in the use of environmentally friendly growing practices, such as recycling compost and animal manure into fertilizers, and employing natural means for pest management rather than toxic chemicals. Our local farms include fields, meadows, woods, streams, and ponds that provide habitat for the wildlife that is an important part of our food web and our community. I'll go often walking at Briggs Bausch Farm. It's a land trust property owned by the town of East Greenwich, managed by a farmer, Pat McNiff, of Pat's Pastured Beets. Now, Pat uses regenerative agricultural systems, which one can see while walking the property. There's a hiking trail that leads from a parking lot, and it goes across some fields, past the farmhouse and barns, and through the woods to Scrabbletown Brook. And as you're walking along, you find that these woods are home to migrant songbirds, raptors, I've seen deer, and other woodland creatures there. So when you buy food directly from farmers like Pat, you are doing several things. You're supporting local businesses, you're getting to know the people who grow your food and how they grow it, and you will also find as you meet these people that many of them love to talk about the food they grow and about their organic and humane methods. And when you buy food at a farm, you have access to a place where you can actually go and enjoy the nature and the seasons while learning even more about how food grows. I've taken third graders from the inner city on a walking field trip to a local farmer's market, actually the Pawtucket Market, where they were able to taste samples of fresh fruits and vegetables and ask questions. And I've also taken inner city students on a field trip to Briggs Bausch Farm, and there they got to hold baby chicks and pet goats, and they walked the trail out to a fenced-in pasture where they fed apples to pigs and watched the pigs forage for roots, acorns, and weeds and insects the way pigs are supposed to. Students also learned how animals are rotated through the different pastures to prevent overgrazing and to help build up the soil. It was a memorable learning experience for the kids. It was a lot of fun. Okay, getting back to the environment, a second environmental advantage to locally grown farming is that it preserves open space. Farmers who get paid more for the quality of their products from nearby shoppers are less likely to sell land for development. Now, development leads to deforestation. It requires an infrastructure of roads and houses, and all that disrupts corridors of natural habitat. If you look at Briggs Bausch Farm, that dates back to 1672 as one of Rhode Island's most long-lived, oldest family farms. It's actually a 72-acre property, and because of what's happened with the East Greenwich Land Trust, it's been protected from the fate of the rest of the neighborhood around it, the suburban neighborhood land that's developed. It's all kinds of housing developments surrounding the farm. A third advantage of supporting local food is that it has a smaller carbon footprint. Within industrial agriculture, food travels an average of 1,500 miles from food to plate. And each calorie of food requires an average of 10 calories of fossil fuel from travel, refrigeration, processing, and often growing. In other words, like those big name brand chicken nuggets that you know about, those are factory farmed, highly processed, and they require 10 times more calories of fossil fuel to produce and deliver than a fresh, locally raised chicken from Pat's pasture. That's 10 times more energy for the factory farmed. And yet, the other thing I'll say about the pasture-raised fresh chicken, which is fantastic, is it's more nutritious. There's no salt, no fillers, no antibiotics, no unhealthy fat. So buying locally grown minimizes not just the expenditures of fossil fuels and reduces carbon emissions associated with global warming, but it's just healthier. So what all this means is that by buying locally grown meats and seafood and fruits and vegetables, we support sustainable growing and harvesting practices. We preserve natural habitat. We help grow local job opportunities in the food sector. We lighten our carbon footprint, and we eat healthier. One final advantage is the minimal amount of plastic packaging. Shoppers carry reusable shopping bags and place bunches of kale and carrots directly into their bags. Many farm products come in nature's own package. I mean, think about it. Potatoes come wrapped in their own jackets, and onions are wrapped in their own skins. And then there's pumpkins and squash and beans. They all grow in their own natural protective shells. I share photos along with a model and map of the host artist village mill building on my storywalking.com blog dated December 1st and titled Eco Shopper at the Farmer's Market. On that blog, I also list some book recommendations for the classroom about buying locally raised food. And I've run out of time to tell you what those books might be, but you can find those on the blog. It is time to get ready to welcome today's guests, Lee Vincola and Susan Murray. Lee Vincola is the Farmers Market Program Manager for Farm Fresh Rhode Island. Susan is the New Bedford Farmers Market Manager, as well as co-owner of Flying Carrot Farm in Dartmouth, Massachusetts. The farm grows vegetables, fruits, herbs, and flowers using sustainable farming techniques. Both Lee and Susan are devoted to building communities that make fresh food accessible to everyone, regardless of social or economic status. Now, I'm Wendy Natterney-Fashon, your host for the Story Walking Radio Hour. here on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. And to learn more about the show and the practice of story walking, visit www.storywalking.com. You can download other episodes from our archives, or you can join our Facebook group, the Story Walking Radio Hour, where members exchange valuable information and where I post show updates. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Thank you for tuning in to Nature's Loving Vibes here on Dream Vision 7 Radio.
How can you make a difference on this crazy planet? Listen to nature-inspired stories and interviews with environmental educators for some new ideas. Sustainable Living News writer, nature walker, and youth educator Wendy Natterney-Fashon hosts the Story Walking Radio Hour to talk about issues that matter and to introduce you to people who are coming up with creative, sensible solutions. Let's engage with Earth, with spirit, and with one another, heart to heart, to solve problems and co-create more meaningful life stories. Tune in to Nature's Loving Vibes every Monday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. here on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Omega Institute, offering workshops, retreats, and online learning dedicated to awakening the best in the human spirit. For over 40 years, Omega has seen more than 1 million people come through its doors to grow, learn, and find a greater sense of purpose. With over 350 workshops to choose from, Omega offers something for everyone. Located in Rhinebeck, New York, just 90 miles north of New York City, Omega's natural environment and quiet pace allow for extraordinary experiences to unfold. Learn more at eomega.org or call 877-944-2002. Again, 877-944-2002.
Why would God design a heart-shaped flower that cries? In a picture book titled The Angel Heart, a curious child picks such a flower and carefully pulls it apart, one poetic petal at a time, to reveal the answer. Discover the miracle of the heart and its role in providing comfort, joy, and peace. Written in the language of love, this uplifting story is sure to open up conversations about emotions, spiritual beliefs, the circle of life, or even fairy magic. Give your favorite child the gift of love. The Angel Heart by Wendy Natterney-Fashon. Available through Amazon and Balboa Press.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back to the Story Walking Radio Hour. You can listen to the Story Walking Radio Hour on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network every Monday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm your host, Wendy Natterney-Fashon, and this episode is about environmentally sustainable local food systems and how to bring farmers, producers, and eaters together through community access programs like farmers markets. Today's first guest is Lee Vincola. Lee is the Farmers Market Program Manager for Farm Fresh Rhode Island. She has been working towards food system sustainability in New England for a couple of decades. She comes to her role with experience as an urban gardener, writer, marketing and PR specialist, event planner, and most recently, restaurant owner. Welcome, Lee.
Hi, Wendy. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. So let's jump in here. I want to know first, what is your story? How did you come to be involved with the Farm Fresh Rhode Island community?
Well, like you said, I've been involved in food systems for quite a long time. I actually have an undergraduate degree in sustainable agriculture education, which I got back in the 90s when this wasn't really on the forefront. You know, it wasn't like a topic that a lot of people talked about. And since then, I've been dipping into different aspects of the food system sphere. I worked in PR for quite a long time, just kind of when the farm-to-table thing was coming to fruition and worked with a lot of chefs and restaurants in that capacity. I've written a lot of articles about agriculture, sustainability, about food, and about travel. When I moved to Rhode Island about 7 years ago, I was freelancing and doing a number of different projects, working on events, primarily not in Rhode Island, events around food and community. I'm doing a lot of writing still. And I knew Farm Fresh was an anchor organization in the state that was bringing people together around and addressing all these topics around food systems that I find so important and so impactful. And I just, you know, I knew some of the folks over at Farm Fresh. And, you know, as you know, Rhode Island is a pretty small town, and things do sort of tend to come together at the right time here. So it all worked out, and here I am.
Nice. Great. So in your current role, you're overseeing the largest winter farmers market in New England. And everything that you do, I just find so amazing. It's so much to coordinate. I can't even, it makes my mind spin. But in what ways does this market, or actually any farmer's market for that matter, how does it help build community?
So farmer's market is by, you know, in its nature, a community event. It's a public event that happens every week in the summer, and, you know, we run this big market in the winter. So it sets up, it's a temporary thing that sets up and breaks down, and it brings people together around a very common denominator, which is food. Mm-hmm. Everybody eats, everybody needs to shop for food. And so our intention at Farm Fresh is to make, is to put our farmers markets in places that are accessible to folks so that they can make shopping at the farmer's market part of their daily routine or their weekly routine, and get to know their farmers, get to know each other, get to know our staff, and really create a community.
Mm-hmm. Now, how many markets do you oversee? I mean, you see Farm Fresh, I guess, there's a number of different markets besides just the Pawtucket winter market.
Yeah, so Farm Fresh runs 6 or 7 markets in the summer, depending on the year. And those are much smaller than the winter market. Some of them have 2 or 3 vendors, and they are primarily in Pawtucket, Central Falls, Providence, and Woonsocket, also placed in communities that have lower access to fresh foods.
Mm-hmm.
And then that season runs from some markets start in June, but most of our markets start in July through the end of October. And then we run directly into the beginning of November, the start of the winter market.
Yeah, okay. So your organization, as we're talking about here, is concerned with providing low-income residents living in the greater Providence community, of course, with access to affordable, healthy food. How is food access addressed by other ways that it's addressed by the farmers markets? I know you have a couple different programs.
It's a big part of what we do at Farm Fresh, specifically at the farmer within the farmers market program. We run a program called Bonus Bucks, which is a federally funded program that allows us to double the amount of money that a person shopping with their EBT or SNAP card, formerly known as food stamps, can utilize at the market. So if a shopper who has an EBT card comes to the farmer's market, the money that they take off of their card is essentially doubled for the purchases of fruits and vegetables.
Yeah.
So it incentivizes folks to come out, shop at the market, and purchase fruits and vegetables directly from farmers, and that money goes right back to the farmer. We're just sort of the middle person that exchanges the coins and distributes the money.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's a lot to manage. There are a lot of coins. There are a lot of vendors. And
I can imagine. Yeah.
And so, you know, you said that I lead the farmers market. There is a team. I have a co-market manager, and we rely on a lot of volunteers and staff. It's definitely a team effort and a crew that pulls it off every Saturday.
Yeah, well, you have. I mean, I go by when I shop there, because we go at least every other Saturday, my husband and I, and
yes.
We pass at least three tables that are being manned by Farm Fresh people, just there with information or to help out with the bonus buck program or whatever. It's a tremendous staff that you've got.
Yeah.
Are they all volunteers or?
A lot of them are volunteers. Some of them are work-study students from Johnson & Wales or other colleges. My co-market manager, Molly, she manages all of the coins and the accounting part of the market. And I handle more of the vendor relations and the outreach and kind of more like the public-facing parts of it. We have 85 different vendors this season, so...
That's fantastic.
It's a lot, it's a lot to manage between licenses and, checks and rent and, whatever else they want to talk about.
yeah. A lot of relationships to manage.
A lot of relationships. And that's the part that I love the most.
Is it, yeah.
Is building those relationships and getting to know the growers and the producers and the ins and outs of their operations and their businesses, because each one of them is a small business owner.
Like running a sustainable family farm business is not necessarily easy.
Not at all.
I mean, there's so much that they need to do with the seasonality and I think just all kinds of issues. Maybe you can talk a little bit more about what difference a vibrant winter market makes to a farmer or a family that's trying to sustain itself year round on a farming business.
So being able to sell at a winter market for a farmer is a challenge in itself, because you have to have enough product to get you through the winter. So often that means storage crops, root vegetables, carrots, potatoes, beets, parsnips, what have you, root vegetables that are stored. So you have to have the capacity to store them. You have to have the planning during the season to be able to grow for that amount to get you through the winter and store them. And then there's also, we also have a lot of greens that are grown in hoop houses and greenhouses that may or may not be heated. And so that's an expense and a challenge to keep going throughout the winter with the weather and, all of this, as well as those who raise animals. Can be very challenging during the winter. So I think farmers in New England, and Susan can definitely speak to this in more detail, have gotten really creative and thoughtful in ways to extend the season. Mm-hmm. 15, 20 years ago, the season ended in October, November, and that was kind of it. But now there are so many more creative ways to keep us eating locally throughout the whole year.
Yeah. Okay, so markets, they're providing healthy, affordable food for eaters and this vibrant community venue where farmers can connect directly with their customers. And, I find produce is often harvested within 24 hours, unless it's the storage, the root vegetables that are stored over time. But a lot of it, it's fresh picked right when they bring it to the market. And then there's no middleman. I mean, I love that. And then I can actually, I can find new vegetables I've never tried before. And then when I see something like that, I can actually ask the grower who's standing right there, gee, what is this and what do I do with it? And I can get cooking suggestions, recipe ideas, or I can be directed where to go for that. And they just have so many ideas. So speaking of cooking and preparation, I was wondering what you could tell us about Farm Fresh's Harvest Kitchens. That's a whole other program. And its presence at the market and sort of the hands-on experience that provides for young people.
Yeah, so as you mentioned before, Harvest Kitchen is a program, it's a culinary training program for youth, most often coming out of the DCYS system. So, they come with a handful of challenges already, and they go through these training program with the staff over at Harvest Kitchen, where we're learning skills, they're learning knife skills, they're learning customer service skills. Harvest Kitchen has not only a kitchen, but there's a cafe there as well. So they're cooking for the cafe. So learning job skills, customer service, kitchen skills, and then part of what they do is they do a lot of jarring of produce. So they have applesauce and canned peaches and dilly beans and pickles and all those products. And that, along with some of the other products that they sell there at Harvest Kitchen, other products from different producers around the region, like you mentioned, the grains and peanut butter and all of that. They have their own table at the market where they are vending to the public. So that's
and
another
the public. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, another
that's
opportunity.
Awesome.
Yeah, it is really great.
Yeah. Okay, so we're getting to the end of this segment. And
okay.
Lee, before we move on, I want to know, what is the best way for our listeners to learn more about Farm Fresh Rhode Island and its farmers markets and all the other wonderful programs it does?
I would say going to our website, farmfreshri.org, our newsletter, weekly newsletter that goes out on Fridays this time of year is usually chock full of information about all of our programs. So you can sign up there on our website as well as social media. We're pretty active on Instagram, farmfreshri. Yeah, I think that's what it is. And we're always open to talking with anybody who's interested in the programs or want to get involved. If there are volunteers out there, we'd love to hear from you.
Okay, great. So we're talking about environmentally sustainable local food systems and how to bring farmers, producers, and eaters together through community access programs. Lee, we're so blessed to have you with us today to share all this valuable information. Listeners, thank you for being here with us on the Story Walking Radio Hour. Please share some of what you learn here to help our farmers and help our environment. I'm your host, Wendy Natterney-Fashon, and we'll be back after the break with our second guest, Susan Murray, who is a farmer and market manager for Coastal Food Shed in New Bedford, Massachusetts. Food Shed is a geographic region that produces the food for a particular population. The term is used to describe a region of food flows from the area where it's produced to the place where it's consumed, including the land it grows on, the route it travels on, and the markets it passes through, and the tables it ends up on. So please stay tuned for more. Thank you, and thank you, Lee.
Thank you for having me.
Why would God design a heart-shaped flower that cries? In a picture book titled The Angel Heart, a curious child picks such a flower and carefully pulls it apart, one poetic petal at a time, to reveal the answer. Discover the miracle of the heart and its role in providing comfort, joy, and peace. Written in the language of love, this uplifting story is sure to open up conversations about emotions, spiritual beliefs, the circle of life, or even fairy magic. Give your favorite child the gift of love. The Angel Heart by Wendy Natterney-Fashon. Available through Amazon and Balboa Press. How can you make a difference on this crazy planet? Listen to nature-inspired stories and interviews with environmental educators for some new ideas. Sustainable Living News writer, nature walker, and youth educator Wendy Natterney-Fashon hosts the Story Walking Radio Hour to talk about issues that matter and to introduce you to people who are coming up with creative, sensible solutions. Let's engage with Earth, with spirit, and with one another. Heart to heart to solve problems and co-create more meaningful life stories. Tune in to Nature's Loving Vibes every Monday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. here on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Edicia is a U.S. nonprofit dedicated to the dream of ending childhood malnutrition for millions of children around the world. Through the manufacture of Plumpy Nut and other nutrient-rich, peanut-based, ready-to-use foods, Edicia has already delivered life and hope to nearly 1 million children in over 26 developing countries. To find out how you can join Edicia's dream of ending childhood malnutrition, please visit ediciaglobal.org.
It's a child's job to play, to learn, and to have fun. It's an adult's job to keep them safe. Did you know that 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys will be sexually abused before the age of 18? Every day, families enter the Children's Advocacy Center because a child's courage to tell someone what happened to them. Keeping our children safe starts with a conversation. This is Michelle Aranger, Executive Director of the Children's Advocacy Center. Learn more on how to keep your child safe. Visit cacofbc.org. This message made possible by the Fall River Rotary Club.
Welcome back to the Story Walking Radio Hour. I'm your host, Wendy Natterney Fashon. You can listen to the show on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network every Monday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Listen online, on your mobile devices, in your car, or ask Alexa. To learn more and for a full schedule, go to dreamvision7radio.com. This episode is about environmentally sustainable local food systems and how to bring farmers mobile farm stands, CSAs, farm stores, and subsidized farm shares to consumers. Here to tell us more about this is Susan Murray. Susan founded and runs Flying Carrot Farm in Dartmouth, Massachusetts, with her partner Tony Wood. They sell their produce at the Pawtucket Winters Farmers Market and the Coastal Food Shed Market in New Bedford, which Susan is now managing. So we have a lot to talk about. Welcome, Susan. How are you doing today?
Thanks, Wendy. Good.
Good. I'm going to begin with your story, and so I want people to get a little bit of your background. I'm wondering how you got into farming.
Both my husband and I are trained as biologists, and specifically we were studying bats. We were both bat biologists, and we met while we were studying bats out in the field, and at some point we realized that we love doing the field research and being outside, but the next step was to be writing grants and be inside, and that really wasn't for us. So we decided to quit that life, and we decided to become farmers. We had been really getting into the local food movement, and we were really interested in our food systems and where it came from and how kind of disjunct everything had gotten. And so we decided to quit our jobs and get on an organic farm and learn how to farm. And so we did several different internships, and then we started our own farm. And we actually started our first farm in Mississippi, and that's where we learned that we actually didn't know enough farming skills. So we got on a farm in the Berkshires, and we interned there for 2 years, and then we started our farm in Dartmouth.
Okay, so that was a Ponagansett farm. You started that about 8 years ago, right?
Yeah, 8 years ago we were a Ponagansett farm.
Okay, and now you've rebranded to be Flying Carrot Farm.
Yeah, we found that, you know, when we got into organic farming, we got into it to farm. We love farming. But if you want to have your own farm, you also need to be a small business owner, and that's something that we didn't really foresee. We got into farming to farm, not to be business owners. Mm-hmm. And over the years, we're slowly learning that we're entrepreneurs and we're business owners, and we're learning skills on how to do that part of it. And one of the things that we've learned over the years is it's really hard for people to say our name, Ponagansett, to spell it, to remember it. That's important if we want people to keep coming back. I mean, we love the Pawtucket Wintertime Market. It's been a game changer for us. But if you want someone to remember which farm they shopped at and where they got those carrots at the Pawtucket Wintertime Market, you need a memorable name. So, we did some soul searching and some research, and we came up with Flying Carrot Farm.
It's all part of the business management, right?
Yeah. It is, yes.
Yeah. So what are some of the other big challenges in starting a farm business and really making it a sustainable venture and a livelihood and something that truly supports you, year-round?
Yeah. So a lot of what I think is difficult is around being a business owner, knowing what funds are out there to help you. So we're in Massachusetts, so our Massachusetts Department of Agriculture, they have different grants that can help you get started. The USDA has different grants that can help you get started, help you get equipment, help you continue. But when you first start farming, unless you know those grants are out there, you're often just starting with whatever funds you have saved. Or in our case, we didn't really have any funds saved. So just basic, you know, financial management skills and knowing what grants are available to you. Those for our personal story, those have been our challenges. We interned for about 2.5 years on different farms. And that really, you know, not having grown up in agriculture, that might not necessarily be enough information on, you know, the particular soils that you end up on. So we were, our longest apprenticeship was out in the Berkshires, and we were farming really rich soils. And then when we moved to Dartmouth, the farmland that we've been able to procure, land is very expensive, so we rent all of our land. And some of it is good soil, and some of it's really not very good soil at all. So our internship had focused on an area where there was amazing soil. And now we're farming on soils that aren't so good. So on top of, you know, just different owning a business and running a business and all that sort of stuff, farming in our particular area, you know, you can have 10 years under your belt, which we now do, and there's still some things that we're seeing for our particular area for the first time. So, you know, you really do need a lot of knowledge on how to farm to really make it in farming and to make it through the tough years when there are a lot of pests or there's a disease that's moved in or things like that.
Or did you have the soils, building up soil and enriching the soil? Imagine learning all this, the things that you can do to make the soil even better. I would imagine, so I've read some stuff about that. But okay.
Yeah, you almost have to become a soil scientist. You know, we've read a lot of books about building soil, and luckily we have backgrounds in biology, so we can understand a lot of the information we read about soil. But yeah, you need to be a soil scientist and a pest management scientist and an insect scientist and a plant scientist. You know, you need all this information. It's a lot of information.
Yeah.
But it's another reason why we love farming, because we're constantly learning and we love learning.
Mm-hmm. Another part of your business is I think, having the challenges is getting multiple outlets for what you grow. I mean, because you can't always rely just on, say, a farmer's market.
Yeah.
So you've got other things, CSA, because you've got I think you said you did some apprenticeship in CSA shares. And
yes.
You have a farm store.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what are the different outlets that you have diversified into?
Yeah, so when we apprenticed, on a farm that only did CSA, community supported agriculture, and that was great. We love CSA, but we also like being diversified. So there might be some years where CSA sign up isn't going very well. Maybe there's a downturn in the economy, and some people see CSA as more of a luxury. You know, and some years your farmers markets aren't doing very well. If every Saturday there's a rainstorm or, you know, bad weather on your market days, you're not going to have a good farmers market. Maybe your farmers market manager changes. Lee's a great farmers market manager, but what if your farmers market manager changes and they're not as good at promoting the market or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
So we like to have a diversity of outlets so that if one outlet isn't doing well, the others can make up for it. So we have our CSA, our community supported agriculture. We have a farm stand on our farm. We do wholesale to local restaurants and grocery stores, and then we also do farmers markets. And we do farmers markets in the summer and in the winter.
Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of good business when you add it all up, I imagine. What can you tell us about the Coastal Food Shed and its market, its mobile farm stand?
Right. So Just recently I started working for Coastal Food Shed, but I've been, as a farmer, I've been working with them since before the organization even got started. I worked with them when they were organizing subsidized farm shares into low-income neighborhoods. And so they've blossomed. They manage the local farmers markets. And they also have this mobile farm stand. So the farmers markets are traditional farmers markets. They create new markets for farmers, and they also service the communities that they're in so that those people can access fresh local fruits and vegetables. But not every situation is ripe for a farmers market. I mean, you have to have enough foot traffic to support the farmers to make it worth them coming. And that's not always, you're not always able to do that. So farmers markets aren't always the best way to get fresh fruits and vegetables into an area and the best way to service the farmer. So in some cases, there are areas where it's really difficult for people to access local fruits and vegetables. And so Coastal Food Shed has put together a mobile farm stand to service some areas.
So it travels
It travels around. So it's a truck and a trailer. And the farm stand manager, what he does is he goes around to farms. He uses about a 30-mile radius. And luckily, we're in an area around New Bedford. New Bedford's a city of about 100,000 people. But around it is a lot of farmland. So he sources from with about 30 miles around that area. And so we're supporting farmers because we're buying in fruits and vegetables and meat and eggs and honey from local farms, giving the farmers the wholesale prices that they are asking for, so not undercutting anybody. And then we're bringing all of those local fruits and vegetables in, and we're staffing it. The Coastal Food Shed is staffing the farm stand and bring it into neighborhoods where they really don't have good access. Mm-hmm. And I know Lynn talked about the bonus bucks that they do at Farm Fresh Rhode Island, which are amazing. In Massachusetts, we have a state-funded system that's very similar to that, and it's called Healthy Incentives Program. Mm-hmm. So when you purchase, if you have SNAP, or formerly known as food stamps, and you use those dollars to buy fresh, local fruits and vegetables, so it doesn't work in a grocery store. It only works at farm stands and farmers markets and CSAs. When you purchase fresh, local fruits and vegetables, it's a dollar-for-dollar match. So if you buy $10 in fruits and vegetables, they'll instantly put $10 back on your card. So this is an amazing system. It was originally federally funded, and now the state's taken it on. So Coastal Food Shed is able to accept the HIP benefits. So again, you have to register as a farm or farm stand or farmer's market to accept them. So we were able to register for that. So we're able to go into different neighborhoods, bring all these fruits and vegetables, and we're able to accept any type of payment, whether you want to pay cash, credit, or SNAP, where you're earning these HIP benefits. Mm-hmm. So it's really getting into those neighborhoods that no one else can really get into and servicing people that have mobility issues. We have a lot of people that don't ever leave their housing development because they can't get around, and the bus system isn't that great. And there's this one particular woman that we've talked to that says the buses will often give her a hard time about lowering their ramp because she's with a walker because she has MS. So, you know, she doesn't get out because although technically she could, it's really hard for her because the buses often give her a hard time. So we're getting in and servicing those people.
Yes. To wrap up. I had so many more questions. So there's just so much to talk about, you know. We could go on.
Yeah.
Because we want to talk about, you know, economics and all that, but we'll save that for another time. And land access, right? All these different issues.
Yeah.
Susan, what's the best way for our listeners to learn more about Flying Carrot Farms and Coastal Food Shed?
So you can check out our websites. My farm website is theflyingcarrotfarm.com.
Okay.
And Coastal Food Shed is coastalfoodshed.org.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is so great to get your perspective on all this and Lee's perspective. Fantastic. This episode is brought to you by the Empowerment Factory, a nonprofit dedicated to giving at-risk youth the skills to lead happier, healthier, more empowered lives. This organization offers engaging environmental literacy curricula that combines reading, creative arts, and mindfulness. How can you help make a difference in the lives of our children? Visit the Empowerment Factory's Makers Marketplace on Saturdays at the Pawtucket Winter's Farmers Market, or visit online at www.theempowermentfactory.org and learn more. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Story Walking Radio Hour. I'm your host, Wendy Natterney-Fashon, here on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. You can download past episodes from my Dream Vision 7 Radio Archives page and learn more at the Story Walking Radio Hour group on Facebook. Receive updates on episodes and blogs. For a full schedule of the Dream Vision 7 Radio programming, I hope you will go to dreamvision7radio.com. You can listen online on your mobile devices, in your car, or by asking Alexa. And this is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network is a media partner for the Omega Institute. I want to thank you all for listening to our episode today about building local food systems through community. And please go support your local farmers at the farmers market, at their farm stands, or wherever else you can find them. So thank you very much. Take care.
Once again, the Story Walking Radio Hour has covered a lot of ground. Please join Wendy Natterney-Fashon next time for a new edition of the Story Walking Radio Hour. This show airs every Monday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Listen live on DreamVision7Radio.com, where you can also access archives of previous Story Walking Radio Hour episodes. Find them under the Sustainable Living section. And visit the StoryWalking.com website, where you can contact Wendy to learn more about the practice of storywalking.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.